5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio, I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Great to have you aboard for another episode of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. We're up to episode number 9 of season 4. Today's conversation is with Nick Wilson of WFNZ in Charlotte. That discussion is coming up in just a few minutes. I do want to thank Core Image Studio for their support of the podcast. Make sure to check out their website, coreimagestudio.com, to find out how your brand's imaging can be taken to the next level. Justin Dove, who owns the company, will also be at the BSM Summit in New York this February. So if you're planning to join us for the event, you'll have a chance to say hello there. Details for the summit can be found on bsmsummit.com. Tickets are still available for media members. If you haven't already had a chance to listen to episode 7 and 8 of season 4 of the BSM podcast with Nick Cattles and Michelle Smallman, take a few minutes to do so. I thought both conversations explored some interesting territory. I'd also recommend doing some binge listening to the Producers Podcast with Dimitri Ravinos and the Under the Radar Podcast with Brandon Contest. I know we're asking you guys to spend pretty much all of your free time consuming sports media industry content, but hey, if you work in this business, it's helpful to hear how other successful people create their own success and adjust to challenging situations. We didn't set out to do anything revolutionary with these podcasts, just to give you a better understanding of how this crazy industry works. So hopefully you'll have a chance to sample the content when your schedule allows. But let's talk about today's guest, Nick Wilson. I first became familiar with Nick when he was hosting nights for Andy Roth in Cleveland at 92.3 The Fan. He's a guy who's come up in the business due to his dad previously working in it. As soon as you hear him talk, you'll know he belongs on the air. He's one of those guys who just loves the craft, has a ton of passion, and is involved in a lot of different ways. For example, if you listen in Charlotte, you'll hear him in middays with Josh Parcell. You'll also, on occasion, find him doing a pre- or post-game show. He's also involved in the station's imaging process. My only issue? The man just loves his selfie videos. I know he's listening to this, so Nick, it's okay to sit in your car and not press the record button on your phone. The world will survive a day without it. There's nothing like spending a Saturday scrolling through Twitter, just trying to catch up on the news of the day, and then bam, there it is. That big damn face with all that facial hair just jumps through the screen and says, "Hey, it's me, Nick Wilson. Have another video for you." So, all right, ball busting aside, I could bust Nick's chops about that all day. But in all seriousness, Nick is a talented guy with a bright future, does a damn good job on the air. And without further ado, I'm just going to let you guys get a deeper understanding of how he views the industry. Here's my chat with WFNZ's midday man, Nick Wilson.
3, 2, 1.
I got familiar with you when you were doing 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, and we'll get to Charlotte in a moment. But before even you got on the air in Cleveland, take me through your radio background. How'd you get started? What did you listen to? Who were the hosts you were inspired to follow?
I actually grew up in radio. My dad was a production director, host, all this kind of stuff. He worked at this little station in Warren, Ohio, called WRRO, the Talk of the Valley. And Dave Denholm, who was out in Los Angeles, Daryl Ryder, who ended up working with me in Cleveland, yep. Dan McDowell in Dallas, Eric Boland out in New York. All these guys worked at this little dingy station in Market 900 or something like that. And that, honestly, like, I've always loved sports, but that moment, being a kid, and my dad used to let me off school if I had good grades, and I'd come in, I'd co-host with him. I'd be like his fourth chair, and I would just bust on people at like 10. And it blew my mind. I mean, it just, I remember walking in the first day and just thinking, why would anybody do anything else? Because at this point, it's small market. My dad was not getting paid a lot of money. I was like, why the hell would anybody do this? Then you walk into a station, and I'm like, I would do this for free. And now we don't tell anybody that.
Of course.
But that, I'll be honest, that station with that collection of talent, young and hungry guys, all who went on to do great things in one way or another, that has been the station that I've programmed against in my mind as a host, as everything, because it just, I mean, it was still one of the best collections of talent I've ever heard.
Who was the talent that you enjoyed listening to the most?
Joe Gabriel, who's now with the Cavs, and Dan McDowell hosted a morning show, and they brought my dad on very early on. And that show to me, it was a little morning zoo, as you would expect, but that show just, it had that element of light and dark where they could do something, I mean, just great takes, really have something strong, and then go into a pardon my expression, dick joke,
right,
out of nowhere. And it would flatten you. And the highs and lows that they were able to do, that show to me, again, is that show that I will chase for the rest of my life, trying to make sure whatever I'm on has that same kind of energy, that kind of chemistry, that kind of buzz of like, how did that just happen?
You were obviously forming an impression of this is what you want to do when you were 10 or 11. When did you finally start collecting a check?
So that would be right out of college, right out of broadcasting school. I was 20, I think I might have still been 21, but 22. I started actually as a production assistant for my dad. And then I did a little bit of new stuff. Then I just dabbled, and I went down the production route for a few years. And then I just, small town station, the worst cliche you can think about. And I was really just making nothing money. We just had our first child.
You breaking $100 a week at this point?
We weighed a little bit more than that. But
okay,
not
good.
And get this, my wife, who was just like 3 years out of college herself, couldn't get a job because she was, quote, too qualified. And so we had one income, and we just couldn't make it work. Had to move home in disgrace, feel like a failure at 24 years old. And I went 9 months, and creatively, I had no outlet. And I'm somebody who, if left to my own devices, I will implode. I will destroy myself if my creative devices are not met and my creative needs are not met. And about 9 months in, I don't even remember where the hell it was. I think I was honestly looking to see if WKNR in Cleveland was hiring. And I Googled Cleveland Sports Talk Radio. And there was a message board that had a faint whisper that CBS Radio was going to be starting a show or a station in Cleveland. And somehow Andy Ross' name was on the docket there. Oh, I've heard he's the PD. There was an email attached. Hail Mary. Hail Mary. Right now I'd be an accountant or something. Hail Mary. I threw it up and I sent my production demo with my voice on it. And I said, Andy, I don't know if this is true or not. I heard you're the guy. I miss radio. I need something. And he got back to me like a month later. I was not hired initially, and it destroyed me. Hearing that station, hearing 92.3 The Fan of Cleveland go on air, as I sat at home driving from my 9-to-5 job, which I hated, driving home every day and listening to Bull and Fox and then go into Ken Carmen, I hated everything. And at one point, I think I actually did call Ken Carmen's show and went off on like a 2-minute rant just because I needed my voice to be on the air. And about a week later, you're talking about, honestly, like a month has transpired. I became the first part-time hire outside of the initial cast that they hired to be a nighttime, weekend, board op, announcer, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I don't say this lightly. I'm not. It took me 2 years before I learned how much I was in my own way as a 2020 anchor. I really cared.
What were you doing that was causing you to get in your own way?
I was thinking.
You were doing talk shows during the update?
I was writing a script and then trying to improv.
Okay.
And so I was living in two different worlds. What I realized is I'm so much better if I just have 3 bullet points and I already know what I'm going to say. So just say it that way and you'll be better. Once I started doing that and also reading my scripts before I read them on air, once I started doing those
two
things.
Did anybody start messing with your text?
Oh yeah. Well, early on. So I don't know if they're going to remember this. There was a moment very early on where I was apparently the worst. I mean, it was apparent I was the worst update guy on the station by a mile. And Adam and Dustin in the afternoons just started messing with me one day. And you understand, they barely knew each other at this point. This is 3 months into the station. And I called, I think, Dustin, like, as a joke, thinking my sense of humor, anybody who knows, I'm very, like, sarcastic. And I called Dustin a neo-greaser, and I may have made a comparison between Adam and Adam Sandler that ended up with me calling Adam the Bull the fatter, less funny brother of Adam the Sandler. And I
probably didn't win you any friends in the afternoon show.
It took me about 2 years to get over that. And also, I remember walking out of that studio looking at Keith, and I really don't think he remembers this, and I said, I think I may have just gotten myself fired. Because I said it on air, and I was just like, there was that moment where I was like, okay, well, it's been nice.
Did you have that planned in the writing, or did somebody sabotage you?
No.
You ever gotten sabotaged?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's the one thing that I really loved, especially in those early days, is we existed to screw with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Carmen would do stuff if you worked part-time on his show. One thing almost got him fired that I definitely still cannot say, or would have gotten him fired if anybody, if it had gone across air, but like, but it would be 2020 guys. It'd be pulling that thing of like, you're on the air. And then you would just see somebody like look around in terror.
Some of the most fun in radio I've had when I was on the air and also producing on a network level. You know, you're a young guy, you're trying to make sure you get everything right. And I had this one guy who would always mess with me. He had these steel-toed boots on, and I'd be in the middle of reading a news report, and he'd kick me in the shin. And, you know, you're trying to do an update and not sound like you're wincing in pain. He'd put, like, tape on the back of my scalp, on my neck, try to pull, like, hair off my neck. So finally one day I said, all right, I had it. I've been getting hosed for about 3 months here. And there was this local explosion at a local power plant. And I got into the computer. I saw his script. And I gently put in, you know, the explosion that took place in Pine Bush was caused by Cordani's ass. And he gets on the air. He did not look at his script. And he says it on the air. And, of course, right off of that, it's like, and he was done. He couldn't stop laughing. The host is looking at him going, what did you just say? And I'm in the other room, like, giggling like an idiot. And he's, like, losing his mind off of it. And those are the most fun parts of doing radio.
We were big on-air punishment for bad screw-ups. So we had this kid, Spencer Davies, a really nice kid. He became me when I got good. But he just could not talk to save his life on air, which is a problem when you work in radio. And so he started a 2020 update. And I'm not kidding you. The page freezes in front of him that's refreshing the game score. And he goes, with your 2020 sports, it's Spencer Davies and the Indians and Toronto. Nick, what's happening? And I am mid-bite of food. And I just, like, I lost my mind on him. Like, what in the hell is your problem? So his punishment, we had people vote on his punishment. And the final update of that show, which was at 11:40, he had to come out and do the update with an impression of Dusty Rhodes. And till the day I die, hearing him say, and with your 2020 sports, I'm Spencer Davies, it will be one of the five things that broke me to where I had to take another 2 minutes into a break so I could make sure I could talk the next
when
time.
When I worked on ESPN Radio's game night, we had a guy, I don't remember where he's from, but Dave Mager, great guy, and he would do updates. And we used to do this thing called the Game Night Express. At like 11:45, it's the stories that didn't make the initial update, that, you know, 60 seconds. And we go to pitch to him, and sure enough, nobody's sitting there. So the music's playing. I'm like, what the? So I'm producing the show. My hosts are looking at me like, how the hell do we go to an express and there's no guy there? So I'm fuming, and he comes back. He had went to get food. He forgot the express was there. And I'm like, Dave, you're killing me. And he's like, hey, man, it's totally my bad. I'm sorry. So the next time we have one last one at 12:45, I look at my board op. I go, get the music. And he's like, you sure? I'm like, oh, yeah, this is not going to be your typical Game Night Express. And literally it's like you hear the da-da-da, da-da-da, and it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's the chicken dance. And he's looking at it, it's like, because the mic's live now, and he's doing with your Game Night Express. I guess I'm Dave Mager. And he does the update, and he looks at me. He's like, what was that? I go, don't you ever be late. And he's just like, touche, man. That was cool. All right, that was funny. You got me. I'll never be late. And you got to have those moments in radio. That's what makes sports radio so much fun. So speaking of the fan, when you got your break there, you start off, you mentioned doing some 2020 stuff. How long were you with the station overall?
I was with the station almost 8 years. So first four and a half years as a god-awful 2020 guy, board op, all that. I did reporting. I mean, honestly, every 3 months, I just go into Andy and say, what do I need to do? What can I do? And he slow played me on hosting for the longest time, and it would turn me off. I would be so mad about it.
Because every guy who wants to be on the air wants it tomorrow.
I can clearly be on the radio. Have you not heard me talk? but no, so about 2.5 years, 3 years in, he says, all right, I'm going to let you host, but you got to keep doing all the other stuff. And it felt like from that point on to when I got the break of the night show, it felt like 2 minutes.
Right.
Because it was just, obviously, I had another full-time gig outside of radio anyways. And between that and having kids and all that stuff, as soon as I started hosting, even though I knew I was not very good, and I was not, as we all are not when you first start hosting, it just felt like, oh, okay. Like with 2020s, I was doing a job.
So when you did get the break, what was it that finally convinced him to give you a shot? Is that you kept coming to his door every 3 months, or did he see something in you? Is there something you changed that ultimately got you to where he said, yes, I'll give you the shot?
I think there were three big things. One, I applied for and was turned down by other jobs that I wanted because I wanted to work full-time in radio. I got turned down twice for the anchor job at night when Ken was still there because I just wasn't ready.
Right.
And every time I would call whoever got it, even if I thought I was better, and I would call them and say, hey, man, great job. Congrats. And so I think my attitude kind of won him over. I also think it was my ability to come back and say, what else can I do? I think that helped. And third, when Ken finally left, they had a few other guys in front of me in the order, and for whatever reason or another, one fell off, the other fell off. When I did my two-week tryout for them, I just went for it. And I tried bits that had no business working, and they worked. And I tried bits that were going to be great and did nothing. But I just kept going. And like 3 days in, everybody said, yeah, okay. Because you don't give a damn if it works or not. You're going to try something, and you're a mad scientist. That's half of the joke of calling it the Nick Wilson experiment,
right?
Is that I'm just cooking up some weird crap. And you may like it, you might not like it, but this is going to be either the greatest thing you've ever heard, the worst thing you ever heard, but I'm going to have fun during the whole thing. Those three things, I think, really helped get me where I needed to be as soon as I started hosting, a lot quicker than I thought it was going to happen.
And you're a diehard Cleveland sports fan, right?
Yes.
Growing up there.
Wearing that on my sleeve.
So that had to be incredible when you're doing a night show and the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James are going into the NBA Finals, playing for championships, winning a championship, and you're a guy on the air.
Yeah, early on, I always, and most people in radio will struggle with self-confidence. I had the great test of hosting against the NBA Finals. And anybody who has ever had to sit, and by the way, I'm also the co-host of the post-game show.
Right.
So I have to pay enough attention that I know what the hell I'm talking about, and I have to maybe not pay enough attention to where I'm broadcasting the game via play-by-play.
Right.
But, and you know, it's funny because the later we got at nights, we did things a little bit differently going down, but it was that whole moment, you know, and I had lost my dad about 3 years prior to them winning a championship. And my dad and I, that was us. Mm-hmm. We were Cleveland sports fans. Yeah, I jokingly said on Twitter this morning that my dad bequeathed me his 4X Jeff Garcia jersey when he passed away. I have the friggin' jersey. So, like, and the way it happened, 3-1, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And to then, I was so lucky because I was not on during game 7. Because we just went to national because it was too big. We knew it was just not going to work. And we had tried it the year before, and it didn't work. So we went national during that. And then we were going to have Les Levine, who's a Cleveland staple, go for 2 hours after the end of the game, and then I was going to take over for him. And initially I remember thinking, like, man, I don't want to be up until 6 in the morning if they win a championship. And then what I realized the gift it gave me is I could experience the end of that game. And I jumped in the arms of Alex Hooper, who became our beat reporter. And, you know, I had a tear in my eye. And then I got to walk out to East 9th, where, you know, you see a stolen fire truck going past. Yep. And then I got to experience all of that for an hour so the nerves could be out. And then I could just walk into a studio and just turn it.
Well, where you guys were located was great. I mean, you came right out of that front door. You're right on the main street. I mean, I was there, what was it? I think it was the first week of June or the second week of June in 2015. I literally had just left 95.7 a game, drove cross country. I actually went, saw Andy. I saw Ken Carman while I was there. That was around the time I got introduced to his YouTube clip of him losing his mind during a Browns game, which was hysterical. But that literally, the Warriors were playing the Cavs. I'm in town. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. It was just, and I wasn't going to the game. It was just, hey, we're on the way to New York, moving back. I want to experience this. It's cool. See Andy on the way. And, I mean, where you guys were located was just awesome. You could feel the passion of the city when you walk outside the building.
So I grew up predominantly in the suburbs. You know, you're colloquially Cleveland, where...
By the way, they don't pay you on this podcast for big words. I just want you to know.
That's not true. I've heard otherwise. Maybe we have to have our people talk. But no, so you're Cleveland by proxy.
Right.
And so... I really didn't know where all the hotspots were, but I remember the first time I really knew how lucky we were to be where we were, and it was the day LeBron announced he came back. I had worked my other job, and I had to come downtown that night to do updates at night. And I drove downtown, and again, this guy just said he signed here. He just said, I'm coming home. And walking the streets of Cleveland, I'm not kidding you, I got goosebumps on my arm. Because there was a real energy downtown. People just wanted to be downtown. They just wanted to be by each other because there was finally promise again that we could win a championship in Cleveland. And I'll never forget, just there were people hugging in the streets. And I remember just thinking, like, in what other world do you sign a free agent, even the best player in that sport, or even one of the best players in all the sports? And people just think to ourselves, we have to come together. And it was right around that East 9th kind of, you know, Huron area where we had the station located. And it was tough. It was actually tough to go in and work that night because I just wanted to be out with everybody and have that feeling, that energy.
I've been to that city, I think, 4 times now. It's very underrated. But you made the choice to leave that city. This is home, and now you're here in Charlotte, North Carolina. That had to be, although the opportunity to join FNZ was there and that was going to put you into a weekday spot, daytime, give you a chance to build a brand, that also had to be tough. I mean, you're cutting the cord on home, a place you've done your whole radio career. So how hard was that for you?
It was one of the most, I'm not somebody who struggles with decisions. I'm not. I am, okay, this is the right decision. I take in all the information, I make the decision, I go. And that's not always easy to be around, but that is who I've always been. And I think it's probably why I've gotten where I have in my life, all the good things. And, you know, it was such an interesting spot because we took care of my grandmother the last 6 years of her life. She had Alzheimer's. And we had just lost her in March, and it was grueling. And you patch that into, me and my wife worked different schedules. I had a schedule that every day, I know what I'm doing for these 5 minutes, these 5 minutes, these 5 minutes, these 5 minutes, and also hosting a show, producing a show as well. We were coming out of a time where I almost lost my marriage because of all this. I mean, there was so much stress on a young couple. Oh, yeah, we had 3 kids too.
Right.
And I just remember I put everything through work prism, life prism. Those were the two things. And, you know, there were one or two other places that I think I had interest in. And then I got down that rabbit hole a little bit, and it was just like, I don't think so. I don't think this meets both of those things. And my wife previously did not want to move. And the more we talked about it, the more we looked at it, and I said, okay, from a work prism, I'm going to have maybe a little bit more easy-to-balance schedule. You know, this is an opportunity we've not been able to take previously because we had grandma. And before that, my dad was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all of these things that no longer were the case anymore. And, oh, yeah, life prism. I can see my kids. And not just see my kids because I was seeing them already, but, okay, now I can see you. And you can have me home at night.
Right.
And all of those things, you know, for me, I saw instantly, this is the right move. I don't want to sell the house that my dad grew up in, that I own, that you know, my grandma passed away in. I don't want to, but I can make a better life here.
Yeah.
And what I thought was, I can't give my wife enough credit here. My wife said, you know what, you're right. I don't want to move, but you're right. And then, to, you know, we get down here, and it's just, it's been paying dividends for us ever since. That's been such a, you know, an impossible decision.
So you had to convince yourself and her why this made sense. What was it about the radio station that made sense?
Well, one, you know WFNC. You know those call letters. Mm-hmm. If you like sports talk, and I am, we talked about WRO. I love listening to other sports talk, getting a feel for how people do things, why they do them. So I knew WFNC. When I came down here as a kid, you know, going to Disney as a member of the high school band, we were driving through Charlotte. They said, shut up. Let's get this on the giant bus. So I want to hear WFNZ. So that was part of it. And then I really love ambition and creativity. And because those are things I have in spades.
Right.
And just in talking with Tony and even the guys who constituted the other parts of the show, not necessarily Josh, because that came about a little differently, but like the producer and the guys that worked, just the idea that there was just something that clicked there. And Tony and I are very different people, but we're both like, we're both guys that just care that it sounds good. Mm-hmm. We just care that the radio's good. And I said, like, if you go with me, like, I'm not just going to read the news. Like, I'm do some weird stuff. You know, like, I'm going to do some stuff that sometimes you're like, where the hell was that? And I'm like, you know, are you okay with that? And he was like, not only am I okay with that, that's why I like you. And that was just like, okay. And like, that's really all I needed to know. Like, listen, and I've said this a million times. I'm going to take some swipes at the canvas that look ugly as hell. Okay. But it's going to be an earnest to find out what it is, because the quicker you let us find out what it is, the quicker we can make something that is consistent and great, like the way we want it.
Well, talking about finding what it is, I mean, part of that too, you have to develop an on-air relationship with a partner who you didn't have previous history with, and the way you guys have gelled together is just phenomenal. It's one thing when you're signing on with a station, yeah, the money's going to be better, the daytime spot's going to be better, North Carolina is probably going to be pretty good to live in from a cost standpoint. So there are a lot of things that make it attractive. You like Tony, that's great. And at the end of the day, you're going into a studio 20 hours a week on the air with somebody to have a conversation. If that's not good, I don't care how good it is living and how much you love your boss, that part has to be good or you're going to hate the job. So how did you know that was going to be good?
I didn't. The reality is, it was an educated guess. And what you just said there, I never wanted to be the guy that signed on for a show that I didn't want to be on. I have seen guys who've had to walk into a radio station and host with somebody, not necessarily they didn't like, but that it didn't jive with. And those guys who might have loved the format, loved the forum, hated every day going to work. And I love this thing and respect this thing far too much to do anything other than something that I can dig all my passion in and my love of this thing in. And, you know, I had heard some of Josh's stuff, and I heard where he hadn't developed yet and where I had an overabundance and maybe where I could have used him. And I heard all that stuff. But really, I remember I was sitting, it was like twilight, and it was like 7:30 at night last June. And it might even been July. I don't know. Time's tough. I got three kids. But I just remember this time where, like, I sat down and I said, I told Tony, I'm like, listen, I know you don't want to tip your hand on where we're going with this thing, but if I'm going to host with him, I need to have a conversation with him. We sat down. I said, hey, these are three things I think we can do really well. I don't want X. Not that I hear it from you, but that this might be my concern here. And the good thing is, the second we got on the phone, it was, I want to do honest radio. I want to have fun. I said, I'm very self-deprecating. I'm not going to stop that. And he said, no, I like that because that's an area I can get better at. And even though I didn't know we were going to 100% have that, I did know that we had at least similar ways of viewing it, that it was going to give us the payoff that I thought. But yeah, when we literally did not really get to know each other until we cracked the mics together for the first show. And about 5 minutes in, I said, okay, we're going to be fine.
Right.
Because the instant chemistry was absolutely there.
Well, and you're in a city where this city is more welcoming of people who are not from here. In both of your cases, you guys weren't established brands here. So you've got to win over an audience of transplants and hardcore loyal fans who have been, you know, called this home forever. So What have you guys done since getting together? You got on the air in August of 2018, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what have you guys done in the first year to win people over on a local level? When you're adjusting to a new market, it's not just watching the Panthers game and the Hornets game. What are you guys doing beyond the show to make people feel that you're not only a good talk show host, but you're part of this community now?
I think an early thing we embraced, and this is going to sound weird because I'm saying in the year 2019, we really tried, let's embrace social media. So like the first week, me and another plus size gentleman on the show had a foot race, a 40-yard dash foot race. And let's just let the record reflect that I did win that. I finally won a race once in my life. But like that was something that we saw of like, we are both really opinionated guys. That might not come out right away that we're also, there's an affinity there, or that there is, you know, we are mischievous guys, because we're going to be busy building up the show, and we're gonna be so excited to talk. There's gonna be takes. So it was a way of, all right, well, let's showcase the personality on some forum so people can see that. And then I think the other thing was just kind of constantly remembering the idea of mischief, because I do think there's something when like, and this is like a tried and true staple of what I like to do. If I think the show is taking something way too seriously that I don't think is that seriously, I will get a bleep-eaten grin on my face, and I will find something that Josh says to pick apart and to needle him on. And that's something that we did kind of early, of just like the hey. And honestly, the other thing we did, and I know this is not necessarily specific to the kind of market you're walking into, the idea of we each came to how we root for something in a different way. I said very early on, listen, I'm a Cleveland kid. I'm never going to forget Cleveland. But I don't have any qualms here. The Panthers and Browns very rarely ever play each other. There's no real conflict here. I've always liked Cam Newton. It's not hard for me to put on a fan hat of Cam Newton. The Hornets. The Hornets and Cavs are rarely ever good.
Right.
They're rarely ever good at the same time.
Yeah.
I have no conflict here. So for me, it was super easy. I'm also a fan. I viewed sports as a fan. With Josh, it was really important, and I think Josh just instinctively knew this, not to do what I could do, which was just embrace it from day one. His thing was, he comes at it from a different angle. So that took a little bit longer for him, but I think it was an honest approach. And listen, has everybody been won over? No. But I think he has shown, listen, the way he shows his fandom is by being honest about what he thinks about something and not pandering. And, mm-hmm. and honestly, he shows it by paying attention. And so I think the idea that we all came to that, and it wasn't necessarily even spoken. It's just, this is who I am. This is how I want to embrace the town. And being honest about that, I think, was really crucial. Because if we both tried day one, we're waving the banner, it would have been insincere. Or if I tried to do the thing of, I'm going to make you earn it, it wouldn't have been sincere, because that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those kind of things were things that it was like we were consciously subconscious about in our intent and in our actions.
When you look at where the show is today versus where it was before, what are the things that have changed outside of the fact that you guys have had more time in the chair together? What are the biggest strengths of the show? What do you think are the areas where the show is still a little weak and needs to get better?
I definitely think that we come in every day and say, how can we have fun and entertain today? That mischief factor, I think, is a real thing. We talk so much. We're both guys who have opinions. We're both verbose. I think, and by the way, that's a $2 word there. I think in earnest, our goal was, I don't want to program to a text line. I don't want to program my show to Twitter. So I think the goal was, we're going to pull back on that. And I think now what we're trying to do is, all right, let's work in that extra phone call here. Our goal was, nope, this is Nick and Josh, and you have to earn your way in. Now that we're there, now it's, let's bring them more in. Let's use that line from the text line to bounce off and ping off into space. I think that's really, for us, the next step. And I also think just finding more ways to really just be goons.
That was your assessment of what the show is doing well, where it has to get to the next level. If I ask that question to your program director, Tony DiGiacomo, what does he tell me?
Nick is great. Nick is just, the guy's a mensch. He works hard.
The vocabulary he has is on next level. Everything is awesome.
He teaches me words on another level that I didn't even know. I think it's interesting. I think Tony's one of those guys who, I think Tony will always look at, did you have enough fun? Did you cover everything? Like, I think those are the bases he's kind of thinking of. So I think those would be the thing that he pings on. And I think also making sure that we're servicing both sides of things. Like, there was a time where we got way too silly.
Right.
And I think as a correlation, trying to veer the car back. All right, did we get too tight? And then, like, I think that's always going to be the kind of thing with us, is making sure you have the right mixture of we're being weird and acerbic and things like that. And also, wow, you guys just beat me over the head with takes. So I think I think that would be his thing, making sure we're getting that right mix every day.
So if I flipped it the other way, I go to Cleveland, I call Mr. Roth, and I say, Andy, tell me about Nick Wilson. What does he do right? What does he not do well? What is he telling me?
He would say the creative is good. He would say he takes big swings.
Would he say he uses too many big words?
I believe he would love just the correct amount of vocabulary that I have. The not good things. Oh, that's a tough question, because it's Andy Roth asking. It's something out of left field that would crush my soul. That's what Andy Roth would say.
So give me one of those. So when you're having a meeting with Andy and he's talking to you about his show, what is he giving you to walk out of that room with?
Andy does this great thing, and I say this with full love in my heart. Andy is one of my favorite people in the world, where I think he thinks he's complimenting you, but it's not a compliment. And he'll go to the thing of,
you didn't suck today.
No. Well, it's so much more subtle and hurtful than that. It's like, so I know what you were trying to do, but here's what you actually did.
Yeah.
And it really is just like, oh, and the worst part is, you know he's right. Let's say he's like 50% right. You still know there's enough of a kernel of a truth there that it stings, where you're just like, okay, I'm gonna take this, and I'm going to go recontemplate why I've decided to do the whole radio thing and all my other decisions. But no, he's great.
As you look forward, 5 years from now, where do you see yourself?
Honestly, that's something I've thought about the last year more than I think I did probably 2 years before that. For a really long time, I had this really easy path laid out. I was going to be a part-time anchor, reporter, host.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a full-time hosting job. And then you move into, let's say you get nights. Then you're going to want to go into day part. One of the reasons why the idea of moving out of market attracted me so much was that it would shake up that preconceived notion. I saw a lot of guys that I really love, guys that I came up with, that they were cool with following that format. As useful as that format is, and as successful as people have had, I also looked at myself and said, well, okay, what happens if I do pivot here? And so now that I've pivoted, the reality is, I don't know yet. Like, you look 5 years in the road, one, provided I'm still here, I want this show to be the best show. I want this to be the show that you say, I'm having a crappy day, I need that show. Whatever I've done, whatever we've done from day one to now, I want to be 6 times better than that. That's all I really
want. You know what's interesting about that? Because I was down in Charlotte with you in December. It was about 4.5 months into the show. My first impression coming out of that is, man, these guys are going to be very impatient. In 5 years, like, they have had to change day parts 3 times. They've got to go national. Have you thought about building the back of a baseball card and putting 5 seasons together? Like, I get it. You got here. You got the keys to the store. You're excited and you want to open it, but it takes time to build that trust and to win over a fan base. Because, look, you come into a market, you're in here 9-10 months. You still haven't even reached a point yet where people trust you as the voice of the Charlotte sports fan, or the guy to advance angles that they can rely on every day, because they're still getting a feel for you guys. I think the first impressions have been tremendous, but a lot of new shows go through that where they're trying to get a read on, okay, so this has been cool. We showed that we have chemistry. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, now what? How about you do it for a few years? And it's hard because we're so competitive and driven to do so much that you want to change the world, but you don't change the world in 6 months. It takes a long time. And what's been great to see, because that first meeting we had talking about the show, I went, all right, this is great. There's a lot of ideas coming. But I'm like, oh, man, I hope they don't, like, wear each other out.
Being somebody who loves what he does but is also very driven and who wants to push himself. And I think that's a funny thing. Like, I'm apt to push everybody on the show. If they think that's aggressive, they should see what goes on in my head. And I have a weekly, there's at least one day a week where my Andy Roth sensor goes off. And I this is one of the greatest compliments I can give that guy. I remember multiple times he said, hey, you're here, enjoy it. And that has been the true thing here, going from that schedule I used to work, going through the chaos that we went through, living through that and coming out the other side, is trying to get that balance in my head of I want to kill. Also, enjoy while you know, it's like
while you're killing, enjoy the stabbing.
What's the idea of like it, like being a hunter and then not enjoying what you just brought home?
Right.
Like, enjoy that. You just did a good show. And realize that I'm probably going to say, well, you better do a better show tomorrow in my head, but enjoy that for 5 minutes. And before you go and think about tomorrow's show, take 5 minutes and play outside with your kid.
I don't think I've ever had a podcast where the takeaway was enjoy death.
Well, okay. Well, O.J. Simpson's already on Twitter. There's a podcast coming somewhere.
All right. I want to wrap on this. I'm going to hit you with four things, the first thought that pops to mind. One pet peeve about sports radio.
It's too damn serious.
One thing you need most out of a producer.
Attention.
The best thing about Charlotte.
The people.
The best sports radio show in Cleveland.
So I'm pissing everybody off.
Oh, of course.
I would say the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
I'll make sure Bull and Fox are aware of this.
I knew it. Because Adam's one of my best friends in radio.
He's going to say, not only on this podcast did you talk about the fact that you, like, drenched us with your sarcasm previously.
Yeah.
Then you picked Ken.
Let me ask you, is there anybody I didn't throw under the bus yet before the end of this that I can go ahead and just bury beside myself?
Before I did the final four, you did talk about death, so you just killed Dustin and the Bulls. So.
I accuse everybody else of being a bit killer. Why would I not just kill everybody else off?
It's good stuff, man. I'm glad you're doing well here in Charlotte. Congrats on the show, and look forward to catching up with you guys again.
Appreciate it, buddy.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.